Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.
So the Sadaka Sutta is a sutta on mindfulness using the simile of a beauty queen. I'll forego the introduction, but we know that the Buddha taught a very specific application of mindfulness that's rooted in concentration. There's an aspect of mindfulness in meditation, being mindful of the breath in the body, feelings and thoughts arising in the ever-changing quality of our mind. And it's from that well-concentrated mind that we're able to hold in mind, to be mindful of the entire Eightfold Path, to integrate that as a framework for developing understanding and its very specific understanding or insight into the three marks of existence. So it's important, we all know that, but it's important to keep in mind the context of what the Buddha is teaching. And this is a brief sutta for those that read it. But it's really interesting, just the simile that he uses. And the Buddha wasn't afraid of using skillful fear in developing understanding. And the reference to the swordsman hanging over to cut your head off if you drop the oil is pretty apparent. I have heard that on one occasion, the Buddha was in Sadaka, he addressed those assembled. Friends, imagine a large crowd became excited over a beauty queen with many talents who has arrived. They declared, "A beauty queen has arrived. She is singing, she is dancing." A man comes along seeking an authentic life in the deathless state. He seeks an end to suffering born of ignorance. So obviously he understands a lot about the Buddha's teaching. He's not distracted by the beauty queen and her singing and dancing. The excited crowd says to him, "Take this bowl filled to the brim with oil. You must carry it on your head through the crowd, excited with the beauty queen. You must not spill a drop. A swordsman will be behind you, and if you spill a drop of oil, he will cut off your head." Hard to appreciate the beauty queen when you got that going on. "Friends," the Buddha asks, "will this man, not being mindful of the bowl of oil, become distracted by what is occurring outside?" The answer is no, great teacher. "I have given you the simile," the Buddha says, "to teach you appropriate mindfulness." Remember how the Buddha described in the Nagara Sutta how he had developed appropriate mindfulness, meaning that there is inappropriate mindfulness or wrong mindfulness or unskillful mindfulness and skillful mindfulness. So appropriate mindfulness is holding in the factors of the Eightfold Path. "The bowl filled to the brim with oil represents mindfulness united with the body." Again, another important reference to uniting the mind and the body. "This is how you should train yourselves. We will develop mindfulness united with the body. We will pursue mindfulness united with the body. Appropriate mindfulness will be our guide," meaning holding in mind the appropriate qualities of the Eightfold Path. "Appropriate mindfulness will be the basis for steadying our minds right within." Another reference to bringing the body, the mind into the body. "Appropriate mindfulness will bring skillful integration of the Eightfold Path. This is how you should train yourself." That's the end of the sutta. Remarkable sutta, again, in its conciseness and its brevity, but also how it relates to so many other suttas, the Satipatthana Sutta, the Anapanasati Sutta, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, an understanding of dependent origination and the five clinging aggregates is included in here. There's a few other quotes that relate to this, and I just wanted to include those in tonight's class. This is from the Majjhima Nikaya, but we've talked about this sutta a few times. The Buddha describing what to do with mindfulness, right mindfulness, appropriate mindfulness. "One tries to abandon wrong view and to enter into right view. This is one's right effort. One is mindful to abandon wrong view and enter into remain in right view. This is one's right mindfulness." In other words, using our minds in an appropriate way to integrate each factor of the Eightfold Path. The Buddha continues. "Thus, these three qualities, right view and right effort and right mindfulness, run in circle around right view. That's a common quote that the Buddha uses. It simply means that those are the foundations that help us integrate the entire Eightfold Path and develop profound right view, which is a view that is empty of clinging to any views rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. A mind at peace, a mind calm. From the Samyutta Nikaya 45.8, similar words. And these are more elaborate and direct instructions on what to do with mindfulness rooted in concentration. Be mindful to abandon wrong view and enter and remain in right view. That's something that's a constant subject of our discussions here, isn't it? In different ways, we are talking about recognizing wrong views, how they're arising in our minds and in our lives, and abandoning them through appropriate mindfulness and a mind well concentrated. Be mindful to abandon wrong intention and enter and remain in right intention. Be mindful to abandon wrong speech and enter and remain in right speech. Be mindful to abandon wrong action and enter and remain in right action. Be mindful to abandon wrong livelihood and enter and remain in right livelihood. Meaning bring your mindfulness into that and stay there. Hold it steady in the right aspects, the skillful aspects of the Eightfold Path. And it's a deliberate act, isn't it? It's not something that magically occurs. It's not something that's granted to us by some external power because we're such wonderful beings. The great news about this, the great power, is that it's up to us. We're the ones that develop this type of mindfulness. We're the ones that develop awakening as the Buddha awakened. And how do we do it? We simply follow his direction, the Eightfold Path. Be mindful to abandon wrong mindfulness and enter and remain in right mindfulness. What wrong mindfulness is holding in mind something that will continue distraction, continue ignorant views, continue suffering. Right mindfulness is anything that is well framed by the Eightfold Path, that inclines our minds towards awakening. Be mindful to abandon wrong meditation and enter and remain in right meditation. Yeah, that's the end of his quote. So that, again, very simple, short, and direct class. But it's very useful in just guiding us. You know, if we lose focus a little bit, we simply remember to reintegrate in our minds the Eightfold Path. So that's tonight's talk. Let's go have pizza. Any questions about the sutta specifically, and then we'll go around the room. Good. Frank.
One question. Why is no the answer to that question? When Buddha asks, is not being mindful of the bolt will become distracted by what is occurring outside.
Because
that might be what he wants to hear, but I don't really think that's realistic when somebody hasn't trained themselves in mindfulness and meditation. Because if I had to carry a bolt will in my head through a dancing singing crowd with a swordsman behind me going to chop my head off, I still want to drop. I'm getting my head chopped off.
Yeah, most people would. So remember, it's a simile. We can't take similes and metaphors too far because we'll find the flaw in it. It's just teaching that the character, the actor, the man, has established himself in mindfulness through the Eightfold Path, and so he is in no danger of being distracted by the beauty queen and what's going on around him. And since he's not distracted, he'll be able to maintain the bowl of oil. It's unlikely.
He'll be the bowl of oil.
Another way of saying it, yes. So the reference is that the bowl of oil represents his mindfulness. And look at where it is. Look at the picture. He is established in mindfulness. So there's nothing that can occur once he is established in mindfulness. There's nothing that can distract us from it.
He understands the three characteristics.
Yes.
That with all these distractions, which represent the hindrances and the taints and the aggregates, he's developed that insight, so therefore they're not his.
They're not mine. Yep.
So therefore he can walk and not spill any oil, or that sword doesn't exist, it's not his.
Yes, and that's the proper interpretation of the simile and what it means to be mindful. No matter what's occurring, when we have established, and again, the reference to the Eightfold Path, when we have established appropriate mindfulness within us, and again, the Buddha refers four or five times, to right within, when we establish appropriate mindfulness within us, no matter what's occurring outside of us, we won't spill a drop.
Now, is that truth there in your deluded mind?
Is that truth within you to discover?
Yeah. Or does it have to be developed?
It's really the latter, because that it gets pretty tricky. There's nothing that's permanently established in us, but through the Eightfold Path, we develop the qualities to maintain mindfulness in our life as life occurs. This is why they're called, another reason why they're called noble truths. They're not, someone in the Sangha asked me an important question, and it's come back to this a few times. What does the Buddha say about essential nature? Well, those four suttas that we went through is the Buddha's answer to essential nature. When you ask the Buddha, what is an essential nature? The Buddha would usually answer this way. Occasionally, he would say, it's an inappropriate question because it doesn't lead to the goal. This is the same type of thing. To think that there's something within us to find is contrary to developing the Dhamma, because then all we have to do is to somehow get rid of the blocks. That's one of the reasons how the Yogacara, the mind-only school, developed with that belief system. That if I just meditate long enough, hard enough, to create this blank slate in my mind, at some point I'll just be magically awakened. And of course, what you're doing is just using meditation as an escape. So the Buddha never taught that there's anything of any value that's inherent in a mind that's rooted in ignorance. That mind itself is what is to be recognized and put aside, whatever word you want to use. So again, to answer your question in a direct way, the way an awakened human being might have done, is it's an inappropriate question, simply because it doesn't relate to the goal. And it can be quite distracting. We talked a little bit last week about how the Buddha referred to past lives, and he referred to them in a way to de-emphasize the importance of it. And his direct teachings then emphasize that point, such as the question, who was I in the past? Where was I in the past? Who am I in the future? Those are related to past lives, but they're also related to that idea of seeking an internal essential nature or an ongoing soul, something that I can hang on to as me. And then once that's established, then you need to start doing a lot of good things to preserve this permanent self. The Buddha said that's all foolish thinking rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. In an understanding into those three marks, we then recognize that everything is impermanent, including, and most importantly, these wrong views that I'm holding. And since they're impermanent, I can let them go. So, great question. I hope I answered it in a good way. We might as well start with you, David. Good to see you tonight. You're good?
Yeah.
Thank you. That was a great question. Lorna, how are you tonight?
I'm good. I think I'll be along with Frank, but, you know, I ain't going to make it across the room with a sword in the back of my head trying to balance a bowl of oil. I don't think I would do that at all. I guess the whole mindfulness thing is something that we all have our own maybe graph to or chart or something that we've nothing to compare it to. It's just your own private mindfulness and how mindful is mindfulness, you know. So I think the point of the sutta really is to make you look at your own mindfulness and he set the bar, you know, what is it meant by mindfulness for you to look at your own mindfulness against. And I am not anywhere near there. I think that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. You're further along than you realize, and we'll admit to. The qualifier to mindfulness, the appropriate mindfulness, is what's important. Appropriate mindfulness is framed by the Eightfold Path and brings insight into the three marks of existence. Mm-hmm. That's the essential nature of the Buddha's Dhamma. Mm-hmm. So, and again, the teaching in a general sense is to recognize that there is appropriate mindfulness within the Dhamma, and then we refine it through the Eightfold Path. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Ron, good to see you tonight.
Good to be here again. Well, at the moment, my body is teaching me mindfulness about how to sit. And it's actually a training in mindfulness. I need to be aware constantly of how I hold my body. One more training in mindfulness.
Yeah, it's so true. How does this position help?
For a few minutes, and then it does, and then it does again.
Glad you're here. Matt is such a good example of this, and Qigong really teaches us how to hold our... Have you ever watched Matt just walk around?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he kind of floats because he's holding his body in just a stress-free position almost entirely.
Just to go on from that, when you hug him, I mean, he's a solid... It's like hugging a horse or
something.
You know that... People have got two legs, and because they've only got two legs, they're kind of a bit wobbly.
Yeah, especially me.
He's not. He's
no,
like
he is.
Solid.
He is. Yeah.
Just when you hug him, you can feel his contact to the earth, and his balance is through that. It's amazing.
He's rooted in the present moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got my own little bromance going with Matt. I love hugging him. Helen, good to see you tonight.
Thank you. Good to be here. Good to see everyone. Going back to the way we were talking last week about the animals being images for other things and metaphors for other things, the way I heard this sutta was the beauty queen was the main distraction. The people all around that were thronging to see her were the attached distractions.
Yeah.
And the mindfulness was the bowl of oil, and the sword wasn't really a sword, it was the consequence of not being mindful and connected.
And you lose your head.
And then you lose that connection.
Yeah.
And so for me today, the beauty queen was my garage, and cleaning my garage were the attached distractions. And not getting the drawing done that I should have was the sword in my head.
So it's
but
a useful
symbol.
The
garage looks a lot better.
Now, are we talking the Milford garage or the...
The French garage.
I don't care about that. it makes the point, doesn't it? You know, and we, when we're not practicing appropriate mindfulness, we are literally losing our minds.
Mm.
And that's the discipline. You could say that right effort is the sword too, right intention. Thank you. It's a great house too. I talked to Matt on the way back, so we think it's a great idea to have a one-day retreat. Why don't you tell me some dates, towards the end of July or the first week of August, whatever that is, that might work for you. And we'll set it up. Great. Thank you. Liz, good to see you tonight.
Good to see you. Good to be here. Good Suda. Yeah, I imagine it's the moment that you're standing with other people that might be arguing or emotional and just not buying into it and being able to...
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, being out in the phenomenal world and having those activities taking place around you and just finding a way to kind of resist entanglement and engagement in that.
Yeah. That's it, no matter what's occurring.
Oil's always lapping at the edge of the bowl.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was a great insight into that metaphor. Mary, good to see you tonight.
It's good to be here. I imagine that it was like playing a basketball game in a very large stadium with a lot of noise, but having proper excellence and balance to...
You are the Warriors.
To do your craft, yes. Very proud of the Warriors. But I thought the metaphor was very helpful. To me, it made a lot of sense in anchoring the mind and the body. You know, you have to be in your body to balance that.
Mm-hmm.
Was it hot oil, or am I just adding to the story?
I think it was just oil. I don't think it was hot.
Lava? I don't know. But you really have to be in your body.
Yes.
To do that. And really using the sports metaphor, anyone that has to do something a certain way and you know, night after night or
yeah.
whatever the craft is has to be within their body and know their body and everything else. So I thought it was a good example. Now one question I had kind of relates to something David asked. We were talking last Saturday, and one of Jen's comments was something like, oh, it was in me all along.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounded a little bit like where, I don't know if that's where David was going or not, but the idea that, and we all agreed with, I forget what the sutra was, but the idea that the, it might have been the ability or the...
It was about when the Buddha passed, what will we do when you're gone, who will teach us?
Yeah, what Jen was referring to wasn't something that she hadn't discovered. What she was referring to was that she had integrated the Dhamma within her.
Okay.
And that's what she was...
No, that just clarifies it, right?
Yeah, she was recalling that, another, you know, what mindfulness means, to recollect or to hold in mind. Mindfulness in that sense is recollecting something that you have learned about the Dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly is embodied within us, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? And the only time we can access that knowledge that we've put a lot of effort in is to be mindful of what's occurring.
Right.
You know, it's again, it's the essence of just a practical teaching on how to live life is to be in your body. This is where your life is. But so many of us, and I'm, you know, PTSD is a good example because people that suffer from that are always or almost constantly dissociated from their body. But we are all at one level or another victims of trauma. It's often not to that level, but that trauma and that response to ongoing dukkha dissociates ourselves from our body. The Buddha recognized this, and that's why he taught a practice that essentially unites the body and the mind with what's occurring. And it does it in a way that allows us, I mean, this is really the brilliance of the Buddha, of Siddhartha Gautama, it does it in a way that is not just temporary. We do this in a way through the Eightfold Path that we are able to ultimately, and not with superhuman effort, put aside every wrong view that would take us then out of our bodies. And so once we achieve that awakened state, we stay united in our bodies no matter what. Of course, we continue with our practice. I got that question, why does a Buddha continue to meditate after he awakened? Why wouldn't he want, you know, of course he'd want to do that. But that's the point. And it's not all that, it's not all that far-fetched, is it? To try to unite your mind and your body. Especially when we have a practice that puts us in our place. In other words, the Eightfold Path allows us to identify when we aren't and when we are in our bodies. And we build on that type of mindfulness. Thank you for seeing that. Remember to thank Jen on Saturday. Bonnie, good to see you.
Good to see you too. I think the practice of acknowledging what arises in the body, I think it assists with the trauma, assists with, but to also, you know, it's like giving yourself permission to, you don't have to do anything with what arises. And I think what happens is stuff arises and fear or whatever the anxiety, whatever other negative feelings might arise because of it, to not, because there's this feeling that whatever is arising, something needs to happen to it other than just holding it.
Yeah.
And so the Eightfold Path gives you so many ways of acknowledging it, and also with the compassionate wisdom for yourself, I think can, it's sort of like some anecdote in some ways, because like what you say, when you come out of, we come out of our meditation, you say to be at peace with a less than peaceful mind. Like that's really important, so that the bowl of oil can be sustained. And I think it is practice. I think it takes a lot of practice, and that if we want to feel something different, we have to behave different, and this is a way to behave differently in some ways, right? Does that
Yeah.
Mean that?
That's what the Eightfold Path is. It is a direct path to behaving differently.
You know, so and sometimes the emotions get a little out of whack, and then but the cognitive stuff helps to regulate, I think. So it's really important for me to also keep this in mind.
Thank you.
Mindfulness, maybe I.
Well, what you're describing is a restore. It's restorative in that way, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it again, it directly gets to the problem of. I don't want to overuse the word or make it too strong, but it gets to the heart of trauma. If we see generalized trauma as unfolding dukkha, an experience of life rooted in wrong views, in that simple act of meditation, that we find we're caught up in our thoughts, and it might be a feeling that has us distracted. And we come back to our breath, and even if it's just for a moment, we have interrupted that ongoing process that keeps recreating the trauma in our minds or the suffering in our minds. And it might return, but the practice has us coming back again and again, being gentle with ourselves, and eventually we'll see that these things that we've been holding in our minds that have been driving our life are like foam on the ocean. There's nothing there. It's just a thought. No matter how powerful the thought might be, especially what was initiating it, you know, nobody gets through life unscathed. You know, we just don't. Some of us have worse traumas than others or worse experiences, but everyone has things like that. That unless we have a way to recognize them and simply let them go, they're stuck. And we had a great talk on this on the radio today. The reason why I think Matt and I work together so well is his practice, meaning acupuncture and qigong and tai chi, is designed to locate where we're holding these stressors in our body. Acupuncture immediately begins to remove that. Qigong does the same thing, and this practice does exactly the same thing. It restores our minds to the state that is unfettered by wrong views. Remarkable. Thank you, Bonnie. Frank, so good to see you tonight.
Good to be here tonight. Thank you for sharing, everybody. That was some good stuff. I needed to hear this sutta. Kind of struggling with those things that distract me from wanting to be mindful and present has been challenging, because it's like my mindfulness doesn't want to be mindful with the body sometimes, with what's going on. And because this condition that I have is also in my mind, it makes it double-edged sword. It's mind and body connected, and the mind and body are two aspects of the same thing. And so I have to remember that mindfulness, the refined mindfulness that you're talking about, the Eightfold Path, and the other mindfulness that they taught for, that the Buddha taught for, you know, being mindful of the breath, being mindful of thoughts, returning to the breath, the body of mind without judgment, because that's where my mind goes right away with my mindfulness. I'm judging how I'm doing, how I'm feeling, and then it kind of throws me off. I start to, like right before all this happened with me, in April, I felt I was in a really peaceful place, and serene and calm, and I could control what I was thinking, and pretty much contribute to however, whatever kind of day I wanted to have, that's what I held in mind. And it was pretty great. And then here I go into the judgment thing for the last 2 months, me holding in mind these head spins and this ailing and failing body of mine, with all the back pain too. It's like all compounded. And I start beating myself up, and be gentle with yourself, those things that are so easy for me to forget.
Yeah.
And a couple of the treatments for what I'm going through was recommended. Take up a meditation practice qigong. Why don't you try some acupuncture? Like all these things from the very traditional world of medicine. And that kind of threw me off a little bit, that they were suggesting that I do these things. So So, anyway, I'm grateful to have here tonight.
Yeah, we all are. I'm glad you're here. So, yeah, try. I mean, I think next Saturday is the third Saturday of the month,
yes,
which means that Matt has a Qigong class after our morning class. So I know you're busy on Saturdays. But, really, he's a remarkable resource. So, but thank you all. It was a great class. You enjoyed the shorter sutta?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I did too.
It allowed us to concentrate more on just one thing.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's many suttas, you're thinking about one and the next one is starting and you can't dwell in that place as long. So it was kind of nice.
Yeah. Like I might even get home in the light.
Yeah, well, okay, let's one announcement. There is now a becomingbuddha.com web app, which means you can put the app on your mobile device and you don't have to go through a browser, just hit the icon, it takes you immediately and very quickly to the website and everything that's there. So there's some instructions that are in Thursday's email about how to do it, but if you've ever installed an app through your browser, that's how it's done. You know, so that's how you do it. I like it. It's fun. Yeah. And I eventually, once I get it set up, I'll be able to send push notifications, but I don't know how important that is, because you all know when new articles go up anyway, that type of thing, or when I'm canceling the class. But there it is.
So many ways to keep in touch.
Yeah, but if you visit the website a lot, this is really very convenient. You don't have to go through a browser. Hit the icon, you're right there, and everything on the website is available.
There are times when I've walked a half a mile before I can get it where I want it to be, because I listen when I walk. So I'm like a half a mile into my walk while I'm still
email.
Yes.
Topic I want.
You can store the entire. Any page that you access, it will then be available offline too.
Oh, okay.
So, but you have to access the page at least once. Mm-hmm. So, and obviously, if you reset your phone, you'll lose it too. But
we'll
figure it out. It'll be, yeah. Yep. Okay. Let's finish with the.
She'll help me. It's a good plan.
We'll finish with metta as we always do. So, find your relaxed meditation posture. And again, become mindful of your in-breath and your out-breath. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class tonight.
Thank you,
peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.